chief AI officer will become the highly paid title in organizations. When people realize about big data and how important data was, we had the title chief data officer. And now this new title of chief AI officer is something which large organizations will implement pretty quickly. I'm already seeing the trend moving in that direction. Ideal role would be someone who understands the business and understands the technology and understands the data. So you can't have somebody in the chief AI role who's only technology or only business.
Hello and welcome to Mind Your Effing Business, a podcast for the ever curious and insatiable learners. If you're anything like me, with an unquenchable thirst for knowledge and zero tolerance for nonsense, you've come to the right place. I'm your host, Dominic Monkhouse, and this is my personal invitation for you to join me on my own journey of discovery. Together, we'll learn from innovators, strategists, investors, entrepreneurs, and business experts that have already left a dent in the world and those that are exploring new and smarter ways of doing it. Whether it's groundbreaking innovations, transformative business strategies, or the sheer force of will to disrupt industries, each episode is a masterclass from the trailblazers who've walked the path of significant achievement. Join me every Tuesday on YouTube or wherever you hear your podcasts and dive deep into the minds that refuse to accept the status quo.
Hello, today I'm talking with and learning from Asha Saxena. She is the author of the best-selling book, The AI Factor, How to Apply Artificial Intelligence and Use Big Data to Grow Your Business Exponentially. In addition to her writing, she is an accomplished professor at Columbia University, where she teaches graduate-level courses on healthcare consulting, entrepreneurship, big data, and data analytics to students across various disciplines. She's also been nominated to be one of the entrepreneurs in residence at Columbia Business School, further highlighting her commitment to fostering entrepreneurship and innovation in the academic sphere. It is an absolute pleasure to talk about her book. She is able to take AI and make the mysterious more consumable for the rest of us. I'm sure you'll love it.
Hi, I'm Asha Saxena. I'm the CEO and founder of Women Leaders in Data and AI. We are a leadership organization where we bring world leaders together to advance women leaders in the age of AI.
Fantastic. But that's not all you are. You're a professor and an author.
Yes, absolutely. I've been a tech entrepreneur now for almost 25 years. I've been in technology. My undergrad and grad is in computer science engineering. So I've been a tech professional for 30 years and really enjoyed my career building data management and analytics company. And now in the age of AI, what I realized was it was really important for the CEOs and the business leaders to know why AI is important. So I land up writing the book during the pandemic. The book is called The AI Factor, How Businesses Can Use Big Data and AI to Grow Their Businesses Exponentially. And I'm also a professor. I teach at Columbia University. I teach entrepreneurship at the School of Public Health in Columbia University Medical Center. So I'm an author, I'm an entrepreneur, and I'm a professor. And I truly believe that life is about sharing your knowledge. You know, you share it through teaching somebody at your company, be a mentor or a coach, or a business professional. You're teaching your customer and your consumer constantly about, you know, the problem you're solving, or you're teaching at a university, or you know, you're teaching or sharing your knowledge through writing a book or articles. I think it's a social responsibility of an entrepreneur to constantly share knowledge in any way you can to help improve your community in all ways possible.
I completely agree. Otherwise, I wouldn't do this podcast. Podcast, books, blogs each week. It's a requirement, I think. People helped you along the way and, you know, you need to pay it forward, don't you? Why did you start the Women in Tech?
That's a great question. And you know what? A lot of time people will say, you know, what about building an organization like you did in the past? I built a consulting firm, you know, a large consulting firm. Then I built a healthcare software company. And a lot of time people will say that, why are you building an organization, a membership organization or a leadership organization, and not building a product, which you're really good at? And I have to share this story because during the pandemic, I think a lot of people had a chance to pause and reflect on their life. And I was writing my book really to share my knowledge about AI. And I've spent so much time in data. And my intent was to let business leaders understand what this technology was and really simplified the concepts so you can learn to build your AI strategy. As you build your business strategy, learn to build your AI strategy. And as I was writing the book, what I realized is that these models really enhance the biases that exist in our world. Listen, I was a woman in tech for 30 years. I learned to navigate my way. And I think a lot of women learn to navigate their way in the professional world. And especially in technology, a lot of times you're the only woman in the room. And we learn. I think there was no, you won't see a lot of women saying that it's not, you know, they would just navigate their life. But when I was writing the book, what I realized that if we don't do something about it now, the models which we built are going to be not helpful, but they will start becoming hurtful to the society, to the organization. And we saw that in great example. There are many examples, but a couple of really great examples, you would see that in 2016 election, Microsoft launched the Twitter chatbot called Tay. She was a 19-year-old girl, and this is the AI chatbot on Twitter, who would have a conversation. So this was a conversation AI. She would hear the conversation on Twitter and will react to what the conversation was happening. Within 48 hours, she became bitter. If you remember in 2016, during the election time, do you remember that? And yes. Microsoft had to break it down because she was so bitter and angry. And she was talking about the wall to separate the Mexican, boundaries. And she was categorizing certain ethnicities and attacking those ethnicities. So Microsoft turned it down and said, oh my God, the AI can be harmful. Recently in October, I was at the UN. There's a UN Women does a conference right by General Assembly in New York City. And they showed this example, beautiful example. They said, when you say Google executives, 98% of the people who show up are men. When you Google housekeepers or house help, a very high number comes up to be women. When in reality, there are 30% of women who are executives. But the reason the model shows it's 98% men because usually model enhances the biases. So even though in the past, having women in the senior role was important, now it becomes critical. It becomes really important that diversity, inclusivity of thoughts, gender, color, age is important, that we bring people together and we're inclusive in how we build our technology. Because the consumers look different, right?
Yeah, I was just thinking, somebody was saying to me the other day that they'd done a search and they typed in doctor and what came back was pictures of men, and you typed in teacher and what came back was pictures of women. But I was struck watching series on Netflix the other day, Drive to Survive. And now that they've got one of the commentators is a former female US racing driver. My daughter, who's 9, said, oh, can girls race cars? And so, it just never occurred to me that that would be something that she would think. But again, just, unless you are explicit, these biases get coded in.
And that's the reason why there was a need. And I was having this conversation with my son. Is that funny how your kids teach you or give you the aha moment? You're talking to your child and you're like, oh my God, when you become so wise, And my son says to me, Mom, and so I was telling him about these biases, and he says, Mom, why don't you do something about it? And I'm like, what can I do? a kid thinks the parent is a superhero, right? So he's like, Mom, if you won't do it, then who else will do it? And I just smiled and I walked away and I was like, But it kept bothering me that this is a real issue. As a technologist, as a programmer, as a technologist, as a creator of software, it becomes our responsibility, the tech leaders, the tech entrepreneurs' responsibility to make sure that we have women involved in leadership role as we build the digital world. And so I called a few of the friends I had. I had C-suite leaders, L'Oreal, Conair, CIA, FBI. So I ended up reaching out to people I knew in the past. And I said, let's get together. Let's create this organization where we all come together And then very quickly, we realized that women can't sit in a room and try to solve this problem. We need to have men in the room to have a valuable, constructive discussion. So we changed our logo from Women Leaders in Data and AI. Now we call it World Leaders Advancing Women Leaders in Data and AI. So it's important that the world leaders come together to address this issue, because it's not just the issue of a woman, it's the issue of the world to build the world in a better way. So we have women and men from Fortune 1000 companies who are senior leaders who come together to talk about AI, how we implement AI, the best practices, ethical, responsible AI. We talk about what we are building, how we build, what organizations are doing. And we have a lot of educational program, from speaker series to our certification programs to the best practices to peer-to-peer experiences. So we bring the leaders together in our World Health Summit that happened. There are 6 summits that happen throughout the year, where we have roundtable discussion, thought-provoking conversation about leaders coming together and talking about how to build AI and what's happening in the large language model. And how, so it's really about education. Education to the senior leaders who can build them, and then they can take that back to their organization so they can implement organizational change, and that then the community gets better. And so it's about me, mine, and ours. As a leader, you become better first. You have to become better, build your community, and you build a bigger community better. And so that's really what this organization is about. It's about learning, growing, exchanging ideas, thought-provoking ideas, and making sure that we are all constantly learning and doing the best we can so that when we leave, we're leaving a world which is a better place.
Writing a book, did you say you got published in 2021?
So I started writing the book in 2021. And it got published in 2023 in February. ChatGPT came out in November 22, and my book came out in February 23. So it was like the right time. It's been on the bestseller list for 35 weeks. I've been speaking all around the world, doing keynotes on AI, and really talking about how organizations can implement AI. Everybody's talking about AI, but how do you truly implement it?
And the VC money's going into AI. And startups are turning up every day. And I was just looking at a demo that a client had built, internal process demo that a client had built today, which was looking at a whole load of data, looking at employee performance data, which was just phenomenal. You know, it had only taken, I mean, it was pretty rough, but it had taken a couple of hours only. And, you know, just cut through, pulled in all the data from multiple systems, put it all in one place and said, here's a employee dashboard. But what are some of the things that you're talking to CEOs and business leadership about? Where do you think AI is going to change business the most?
We've been using AI, you know, when you talk about artificial intelligence, what it is? It is really when machines can act and make decisions like humans do. So it's really about predicting what's going to happen and how a human solves the problem. And when you think about artificial intelligence, it's about machine learning. So there are different categories of artificial intelligence. We've been using mathematical models, which gives us prediction for many, many years. In 1950s, the artificial intelligence term was coined. And what you see the progression throughout the years, we went, you know, even though artificial intelligence was coined in 1950s, we could not make it powerful because we didn't have enough data. Now that we have the data, the big data helped make these models become better. The mathematical models have been around for a long time. The large language model was the aha moment. Large language model brought the AI in forefront. When a common man can have a conversation with the computer in natural language, and the computer can process that natural language to give you answers back. And that's when the transformation happened, and it came to every single household where a kid knows how to use a ChatGPT because he can have a conversation with this model to get the answers back. But in businesses, we've been using mathematical models to predict and forecast and to understand how to solve a problem. I love the story of Netflix. Netflix started becoming obsessed with their customers and tried to understand what my customer wants. Netflix knew when you paused, when you played a video. They knew what was in your queue and what your choices was. so they could actually predict and give you recommendation based upon your choices. That was a part of AI. So AI has been used in businesses for a long time. Now, when you're thinking about how should I use the business in the business, it's about understanding what data are we collecting. It's not only about automation, but it's about how can we have a better chatbot that can serve our customer. It can be about a better search engine or learning to build or create an API with your ChatGPT to understand how you can look at your data and find things, nuggets within your data which you have. But it's also about understanding what is my business problem. It keeps going back to, we're talking about, you know, I'm speaking at a conference in April where I'm speaking to about 500 coaches and entrepreneurs. Why do they care? They care because when they're building their business strategy, it's important to understand where and how should I use AI. AI is a buzzword right now. So in the book, what I do, I divide my book into two sections. The first section is about use cases, examples like Netflix. How did companies who succeeded and grew fast or could create the differentiation use data and AI to create the differentiation? And there's some really great case studies from Netflix to Starbucks and so on. And then I talk about, in the second part of the book, I talk about four-step process to implement AI. And I start with understanding where you are. And in a business strategy, which quadrant do you fall in? Are you looking for AI to be an optimizer, to create efficiency and cut cost? Are you looking at AI to be an extender, where you're trying to find more markets or expand your sales, you know, or do M&A? Or are you an innovator where you're trying to launch new products or find new products? Or you're a multiplier where you're trying to break your own business model, like Netflix did. Netflix broke the business model of how we consumed media. So really understand where you are. So that's the first step. The second step, I talk about the data readiness, and which is a critical piece. Is your organization ready to implement AI? Do you have the data to create the insights? So I talk about the 22 elements in data readiness, because that's a very important step. The third step is about really creating the formula to understand, do you have the business value and a data value to create your data performance index? If your data performance index is high, then you can get the value out of the AI you build. And then I talk about the prioritization. What are the use cases which are low-hanging fruits for you to quickly implement something and start seeing the value? But everything has to tie together to the business value. Everything has to tie together to your business strategy. So you can't do AI for the sake of doing AI. You need to do AI which is aligned to your bigger goal. It's important for coaches and entrepreneurs to really, or the C-suite leaders to really understand the strategy.
Let me interrupt the conversation for a minute, because you don't want to miss this. My new book, Mind Your Effing Business, is out on Amazon. If you're thinking, yet another business book, you're wrong. This is the blueprint to cutting through the noise and achieving unparalleled success. Whether it's supercharging sales, mastering talent acquisition, building a powerhouse brand, or cultivating a company culture that breeds success, this book is your ticket to a transformative journey. It's filled with practical tools and frameworks that I use every single day with my clients as part of their coaching program. If you want to take your business from good to great, check the link in the show notes or head over to monkhouseandcompany.com to grab your copy today. Now, back to the conversation. What are some of the low-hanging fruit examples that you pull out?
So before I answer that question, I have to tell you that when you do the planning session, and so I have my second book coming out, which is a playbook and workbook that will help you understand, take the book, and now you can actually do your own working session. In the workbook, you'll be able to write down use the process to identify your low-hanging fruits. So it's a process to understand what works for me in my organization. So let's say in my organization, if I'm a hospitality, and for me, having a good customer service experience is important. Or if I'm a coach's organization and I want to have a good onboarding experience, maybe I can have a 24/7 chatbot who actually can give you that human-like experience. You know, you can create avatar who gives you onboard training. and that's important for you. So that could be a low-hanging fruit for me. But maybe for you, your manufacturing organization, and for you, supply chain is important. That might not be a good low-hanging fruit for you. So the low-hanging fruit might change from industry, organization, the size of the company, and it would vary. So it becomes really critical that when you're doing your annual planning session or your quarterly planning session, you look at AI strategy, and where should AI actually get implemented within your organization. And I think that's where the workbook and the playbook will really help organizations to really think through the four-step process. Instead of randomly thinking about, I want to jump in, have a systematic approach of using when and where to use AI, have a plan to implement and identify the low-hanging fruits.
Do you see organizations creating the title Chief AI Officer?
So yeah, it's a very, very common. In fact, a lot of social medias are predicting that Chief AI Officer will become the most highly paid title in organizations. Listen, when people realize about big data and how important data was, we had the title Chief Data Officer. And now this new title of Chief AI Officer is something which large organizations will implement pretty quickly. I'm already seeing the trend moving in that direction. But the smaller organizations who want to have AI, it will be hard for them to hire. So you'll see a lot more fractional Chief AI Officer popping up now, because mid-size or smaller companies might not be able to afford, but would need someone who understands where AI will be implemented. The Chief AI role ideal role would be someone who understands the business and understands the technology and understands the data. So you can't have somebody in the Chief AI role who's only technology or only business.
I was with a client recently in a planning session. They decided as a C-suite that the CEO is going to own the role for now, but that they think the biggest impact in the next 12 months is probably a 20% efficiency saving in headcount as they grow. Automation. I was just thinking about, you know, the 2x2 matrix that you mentioned before. You know, if you had a chief revenue officer who was growing the business at 20%, that's probably more impactful than a 20% cost saving or efficiency saving. But do you think, 20% is too high, too low? Is it different for each one of the sort of 2x2 matrices?
So it depends upon the maturity of the organization, right? So it depends upon how mature the organization is. Do you have the data you need to create that improvement? What stage of organization you are? But to say that you might be able to create 20% efficiency, I think is very reasonable, because of all the things in the organization you could optimize. There are many steps. I mean, think about supply chain. You know, if you can predict what your supply would be and you can create, your demand would be, you can make sure you're doing your supply or ordering your supply and inventory properly. So there's no waste. If you can use a robotic process automation to have a little chatbot or a bot go and understand each process to do the order processing, then you don't need a human to actually go in and input and have errors. They say when a bot goes out to do, you know, especially in RPA, which is robotic process automation, the error is a lot less than what the humans do. So now you have a machine which is repeating the process while you go to sleep. You have some, you know, you have a bot going into the system and doing the process for you. I was at AI Summit, and you know, you get to see all these demos, and I got to see this demo about a digital human. You can actually drag a bot, name the bot Amy or John or whatever you want to name it, and that bot could be your recruiter. And the recruiter, and you tell the recruiter, I want to hire this person. This is what, and then you give skills to that bot. This is Amy. She's my HR recruiter. She's going to go write the job description, find the candidates, and schedule interviews for me. And the bot has those skills to be able to write the job description, post the job, find the candidates, match the candidates to the job, and schedule interviews. And then all you do is you show up to interview the candidate. So think about having a digital human as your employee who doesn't take vacation days, doesn't take time off, doesn't have emotional or ego needs, right? doesn't complain. So we will be entering into the world where we will have humans who are our peers, but we'll also have digital bots who will be our peers, these digital humans who will be working with us.
For a couple of years, I've used an AI PA to book my meetings, Clara from Clara Labs. And I have a couple of times actually tried to replace her with a human being, but she remains consistent because you have to go to the trouble of writing the guardrails. And, you know, human employees, I don't know, they have a bad day, they forget, they make a mistake. They're not, it's the consistency and repeatability, which is really good. But on recruitment, actually, I was working with a client last week and they asked me to do some, help them with some recruiting. So I uploaded the CV and the job spec into Claude AI and said, should we give this candidate the job? It said, I am not really able to tell you that, but here are the gaps in the CV relative to the job spec. And here are some interview questions that you should ask to see if you can fill the gap. So even, I think even that, even if it's not booking the, even if it's not booking the meetings yet, using AI to help with what questions should you ask? Fantastic, useful and accessible. It doesn't, that actually, you know, is the type of thing you could be using in an organization, you know, even if you haven't got, you know, big data. And even if you're not writing a chatbot, there are things almost everybody in every role in the organization could be using AI. My 9-year-old, who was wondering when I was saying earlier, it hadn't occurred to her that women could be racing drivers. The other day she said she was stuck with her homework. And so just typed the question into Perplexity and said, could you explain how to do this? Dun, 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 dun. And there's a better explanation for her than I could give her. And, you know, perfect use of a little bit of AI in the evening to help with homework. Fabulous. It's just incredible to try and think, you know, where are we now versus, God, a year ago? And so looking into the future is almost impossible with the speed of change.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this revolution really came because of the advancement of large language models. The fact that we have the massive amount of data. I mean, listen, pandemic helped us because everybody was working from home and on their computers, and more people were using, you know, their laptops for work than just going and driving and spending time in, you know, transit to get to work. So we collected more data during pandemic than we would have otherwise. So the more data we collect, these models get stronger.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had Matt Dixon on the podcast, he's written Jolt Effect. He's the guy that wrote Challenger Sale. And he said the pandemic meant for the first time ever, we had recordings of all of these sales calls, even large, you know, big deal transactions, consultative sale transactions. And they did millions of hours. They analyzed millions of hours of sales calls in writing the Jolt Effect. And so just that sort of a one time, maybe the only time, because lots of that has gone back to face-to-face, but just fabulous data to then say, okay, well, what happened on the call? What was the outcome? Because they know that they've got the outcome data in parallel, put it all together and say, what do the best salespeople do on a call? And how could we then train the rest to be as good as the best? Fabulous.
And that's so true, right? If you think about it, how true is that? That it gave the opportunity for so many of us to learn and work in such a different way, but also collect the data. Now, all these organizations who've collected the data over that time, even, you know, in your example of, you know, sales training, you can learn how many times your employees are listening to the training. And you can start creating, you know, correlation between that and performance. You know, people who actually went through the training one time or multiple times, or they come back and revisit it. What is their performance? You know, what type of people perform better? So there's so much advantage of knowing the kind of data you have and you store and what you should be storing. It gives you also like ideas of what should we be collecting? What kind of data should we be collecting?
And when you're speaking at conferences, you must get some peek into the future. What are some of the things that you've seen people talk about or demos that people have given that you take your breath away?
in general, I think people are fascinated by, you know, there are three types of artificial intelligence. The narrow intelligence, where we are, you know, the chatbots and so on. General intelligence, which is where a computer becomes as smart as we are and can start have intuition, you know, that they will be able to predict the next thing without us prompting them. And then super intelligence, where they far exceed our intelligence. And I think that's the worry. So what you hear in the media and the Elon Musk of the world, right, talking about the worry of what could be, where the robots will start having emotions and will start having intelligence far exceeds us. We hear that in the media, right? That's what we are hearing. In conferences, people are talking more about, will we be out of job? How do we upskill? And so you see the worry of people. How is it AI coming into our workplace, our lives? And reality is we are still working with AI, the narrow intelligence. We're still at the place we're collecting the right data. We're trying to get our hands around where should the machine learning will help us in our supply chain, our customer service, our sales and marketing intelligence. So and you'll see it as you coach companies, you'll see that mid to small companies are still trying to figure out where they should be applying. Even large companies are still trying to figure out where to apply. So in reality, where people are, the conversations are going is, how do I, Asha, I got the data, what do I do? Or I want to use AI, where do I start? And so I always say, and that's why I think the book is such a great resource, and the workbook and the playbook is going to be such a great resource. It gives you a step-by-step process to get started. You need to figure out, it is so important, first of all, if you use a coach or you do internal annual planning or quarterly planning, important to have a strategy. And once you have a strategy, you need to know how you're going to implement your AI or technology, align it to your business strategy. And then you make sure that you have the right resources, the right people to implement that. So I think it's really about a step-by-step approach. Where I see the organizations going, I do see that people will be implementing AI. Everybody need understand that there is a need to implement AI. The question would be, how fast organizations can evolve to use technology within the system. The organizations who will not use AI will land up lacking and staggering for success, because the companies who will land up using AI will definitely get ahead. It's a mandate. It's become a mandate as a professional for you to learn about AI, for an employee to get used to learning AI, because digital humans are here to stay and they're going to come into our workforce and we will need to learn how to navigate and work with AI.
Asha, what is it that you know now that you wish you'd known earlier?
I have to say that when I was younger, I wanted everything done fast. I expected my team to work fast. I wanted everything. And what I realized that as a good leader, you need to understand the strength of the people where they are, appreciate them for what they can do for you, and learn to become a mentor, to let them get evolved how they should evolve. Instead of expecting everyone to act like you, produce like you, and be impatient with the process. I think patience, having the commitment to build others, and have the motivation to be a giver than a taker. And that helps a lot as an entrepreneur, as a leader, to create something that lasts for long, that you can create a legacy.
Very good. Very good. And I'm going to ask for if you've got any books you recommend. Obviously, you've got the AI factor, how to apply artificial intelligence and use big data to grow your business exponentially. Congratulations on that. But what else have you read, or maybe as you, with your sort of long entrepreneurial career, maybe you've got other books that have been transformational for you, or maybe even you think are relevant to women in tech? What should people pick up and read?
You know, my all-time favorite business author is Jim Collins. You know, I think The Good to Great, Great by Choice, his books are fabulous. If you haven't read it, those are the books you need to read over and over again to understand the concepts, and different things will hit you at different times. So I love those books by Jim Collins. Jim Collins, Flywheel Effect, really strong, you know. So I like him as an author, but personally as a leader, I feel a book which was very meaningful as a leader, as a person who looks for purpose. As a leader, you need to provide the purpose for the people who work for you. I think Man's Search for Meaning is my all-time favorite book. You know, I think Man's Search for Meaning is such a great book, and everybody should read it because it tells you what hope can do for you. You know, it's not about where you are today, but where you want to be. So just a fabulous book. And for AI, I would say Artificial Intelligence, A Modern Approach by Stuart Russell is a great book to read on artificial intelligence. But I always say that invest in learning. It's so important to learn and be a, you know, lifelong learner, critical, especially in this day and age.
Fantastic. You mentioned you were speaking. That's the Shannon Sisko's event in Whistler, isn't it, in April?
Yes, I am. I am speaking in April, April 17th in Whistler at Tip Top Conference run by Shannon. I will be talking about AI. I'll be talking about how to implement AI strategies. I'm also running a workshop on certification, how to get certified to be an AI strategist in October. And my workbook is coming out in summer, so look out for that. And if you are in Whistler, come say hello to me.
Brilliant. Where's the best place for people to get in contact with you?
The best place is LinkedIn. On LinkedIn, follow me or send me a message. I always respond on LinkedIn.
That's fantastic. Asha, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you today. Thank you very much for coming on and sharing.
Thank you so much for having me, Dominic.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. If you'd be kind enough to leave a review, that will be really helpful to other like-minded entrepreneurs who might then find this podcast and we can grow our community. If you want to find out more about our guests, head over to monkhouseandcompany.com/podcast, where you'll find some cracking show notes and additional reading. Hope to see you back next week. Until then, mind your effing business.